It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Currently on display at the Heinz History Center is an exhibit celebrating toys from the 50s through the 80s. One toy marking its 60th anniversary has roots right here in Pittsburgh. Macetoon cartoonist and pop culture contributor Joe Woese joins us now for a look at the history of the Ant Farm. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Who invented the Ant Farm? What should we know about the person behind this?
The man who invented it is Milton Levin. Milton was born here in McKeesport. He was actually valedictorian of McKeesport High School. He was born in 1913. He was the son of a man who owned several dry cleaners. So he had an early propensity for business. He really appreciated the idea of being able to get a lot of value for a small amount of money. And that really had a big impact on him. He knew he wanted to someday go into business for himself.
So he goes off to the war, as many of his age did, off to World War II, then returns home and decides to start his toy company. This was his dream. Why a toy company?
While he was overseas, he knew eventually the war was going to end. We all hoped it would. And he read something called the Kiplinger Letter. And it was business ideas, business news. And he read an article that said the two industries that were going to be in the most demand were bobby pins, because metal had been in such short supply throughout the war that the minute people got home, they were going to want bobby pins, especially the women hadn't been able to do their hair properly for the entire war. And the other thing was toys, because there was going to be this sudden, large number of children born as these men came home from war.
The baby boomer generation.
The baby boomer generation. So he decided toys was a better fit for him.
And so how does he end up developing the Ant Farm idea? I know he had a partner, and this was a guy who was also his brother-in-law, widely regarded as a marketing genius and quite literally the man who wrote several books on the subject. So what type of marketing methods did they employ, and what kind of toys did they come up with, and how did it lead to the Ant Farm?
Well, Joseph Cosman was from Braddock, Pennsylvania, not too far from here, of course. And he was really this marketing guru. He had this sort of unique approach to everything. A great example is he found he could get the patent on the potato gun, the spud gun. He found out he could get it very cheaply because it had flopped. But he also found out, he did some research and realized that potato farmers had a glut of potatoes. They had had an overabundance of crops. So he put the two and two together. He, as a publicity stunt, had pounds after pounds, hundreds and thousands of potatoes dropped off in front of his business and used that as a chance to gain a little bit of attention and started marketing the spud gun. Shrunken rubber, shrunken heads was another of their popular toys. And perhaps their biggest up to that point was something new, plastic army men. Up until that point, army men, little toy army men, had been made out of metal. Well, metal was, of course, in short supply, so they decided to make these out of plastic. They approached a company called Nosco up in Erie that was best known for producing the flat Cracker Jack toys. And so they produced these flat army men. And the way they marketed it really changed the industry. They decided to market in the back of comic books. Remember those ads? 100 army men for a dollar? That was them. They really started that whole trend. Same thing with the shrunken heads in there and all these different novelty items that were advertised in the back of comic books. So it was really a unique marketing approach and one that really captured their audience of kids.
So all of these sound like very practical ideas, well thought out. How does it lead to the Ant Farm?
So they're making good money at this, these ventures. They're having kids from all over the country send in dollar bills, and they literally loaded up a suitcase with dollar bills, thousands and thousands of dollar bills, and headed off to California.
So sold a lot, made a lot off those magazines.
Made a lot off those kids who were selling newspapers, I guess. So leave for California. They get there, they move their company with them, and they're looking for sort of what's their next big thing. Milton Levin is sitting around his brother-in-law and his sister's pool in California and L.A. with the sun coming down, and he just sort of gets bored and daydreaming, and he notices a line of ants just sort of trudging along. And it took him back to his childhood on a farm not far from here in Pennsylvania, where he would collect ants in jars and just watch them for hours working. He had such admiration for these little workers. He said they were a perfect little socialist, you know, all working for the greater good. So Bernie Sanders would have made a fine ant. So he, you know, he throws around this idea. He's like, but boy, I'm fascinated by this. I'll bet you many kids would just find this interesting. So they prototype it with an old plastic clear handkerchief container. They make a wooden base. They fill it with a sand, throw in some ants, and it becomes a hit. They look at this idea. They think, this is amazing. They start marketing it via mail order.
This was what year?
This is in, this is 60 years ago. So this is in 1950s, that they start marketing this idea, and it really takes off through the comics. But there's some problems with it. They can ship the ant farms, but they can't, you know, put ants on the store shelves. So as it takes off and stores want to carry it, they realize they can't just put ants with it. So they start shipping little vials of ants. So you would buy your ant farm in the store. You would get a certificate, what they call a stock certificate for ants. You would send that in. They would send you a little jar of about 20 ants.
So was it difficult to sell this if you're walking through a toy store and all you're seeing is an empty handkerchief container filled with sand?
It was inexpensive. So they really kept that, you know, one of the main things, keep it inexpensive. Their original design, his sister actually did a little sketch of a farm, and it hasn't strayed too much from that concept. You have that little background. And so they kept it inexpensive, and it tapped into this interest kids had in science. It was a very, very practical toy that they would learn from. So it was really, you know, an early educational toy. So people loved it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Joe Woese about the 60th anniversary of Uncle Milton's Ant Farm. Yes, you remember the ant farm, perhaps a toy that you had as a kid, and you would pick it up in the store, sand inside glass, and the ants were shipped separately. First of all, where did they get all those ants?
So they put an ad out in some of the California newspapers paying a penny an ant. And people actually went into the California desert. Some people, you know, in Death Valley, just all over. They're going into the deserts with little portable vacuum cleaners and shovels. And they're just trying to get as many ants as you can. And there were some people that were making $3,000 a week collecting ants at a penny an ant.
And how many ants have they shipped over the past six decades?
They have shipped, I think it's over 60 million ants. Actually, I think it's much more than that. It's just such an astronomical number. They're shipping, you know, 20 ants with each ant farm, and then people were reordering because ants actually don't last that long. So they were just shipping these out. And there were so many ants coming in. One of my favorite stories about him is a guy showed up in his office, Milton's office, with a jar full of ants. And he said, you know, I want $50 for these ants. And Milton looked at him and said, well, how many ants are there? The guy got very frustrated, dumped them all out on his desk and said, you count them, and left. So, you know, these ants were pouring in and still are.
And so people are still buying the ant farm? How popular of a toy is it these days?
It is very popular. It's become sort of this traditional science fair project. It's used in classrooms, and kids love it. They're fascinating watching these little workers. It really is not just an educational toy, but, it's a very calming toy. You sit and watch ants. I mean, think about it. We love fish aquariums, and ant farms are sort of a similar concept, only they're much more interesting than fish, I think.
Milton Levine died in 2011 at the age of 97. His creation has been part of our childhoods, our classrooms, and countless science fairs. So what would you say is the secret to his legacy?
You know, the secret to his legacy is he really, really loved these ants. You know, there's so many interesting statistics about ants, about, you know, how many there are, you know, millions per person, and how they can lift 50 times their own weight. But he said the greatest accomplishment the ants ever did was to put three kids through college. So that was, he really admired ants. He really appreciated them. And he always said, if you're going to work around a lot of ants, you better be an uncle. And that's Uncle Milton.
Culture contributor Joe Woese joining us to talk about the 60th anniversary of Uncle Milton's Ant Farm. Joe, as always, great thanks.
Thanks for having me.